There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it? The other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Media Geek. I'll be your host today. I'm Drew Tirico. Paul is out of town. Today on Media Geek, more on the great Christian FM translator scandal, and it's bad news for the God Squads. We'll hear from Harold Feld of the Media Access Project, working with the Prometheus Radio Project to petition the FCC to freeze all processing of FM translator construction permits. And it looks like Edgewater Broadcasting Incorporated, Radio Assist Ministry Incorporated, and World Radio Link Incorporated have fallen from the FCC's grace. We'll talk about this breaking situation along with some other headlines you won't want to miss. Media Geek News features stories about our media environment that typically get relegated to the business pages of print and electronic media. But news about our media and its policies is not just important to investors, but it affects all of us if we are effectively to strive toward a democracy. Ending weeks of speculation, the Bush administration has chosen the new chair of the Federal Communications Commission in the form of current FCC Commissioner Kevin Martin, who is not the choice of embattled outgoing chair Michael Powell. Because he is already on the commission, his appointment as chair will not require Senate confirmation. At age 38, Martin has shown himself to be a shrewd Washington player, popular with the Bush administration, while also forging his own path at the FCC, somewhat independently from former Chairman Powell. Martin served as Deputy General Counsel on Bush's 2000 campaign, while his wife, Catherine, is a Special Assistant to the President on Economic Policy and previously worked as an advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. Martin is popular with conservatives and is anticipated to be very industry-friendly with regard to regulation. However, unlike Powell, Martin appears to be more politically savvy and may know better how not to ruffle feathers on the Republican side of Congress. Martin is most comfortable with telecommunications regulation and generally favors a deregulatory path. Already, telecommunications companies and lobbyists are praising his selection. In 2003, he voted in favor of increasing media industry consolidation in a party-line vote with fellow Republicans. That decision was sent back to the FCC by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in 2004. Many conservative religious groups also expect him to be aggressive on the broadcast indecency issue. In fact, Martin has already advocated a more forceful approach to indecency fines than Powell, and last month spoke only positively about extending indecency regulations to satellite and cable. Powell, on the other hand, recently said that he doesn't believe indecency regulations should be enforced outside of broadcast radio and TV, and that he thinks any effort to do this would be found unconstitutional by the courts. While Michael Powell was often accused of forcing strongly ideological deregulatory campaign at the FCC, with Kevin Martin we may see an ideology that leans more toward conservative cultural values, while also embracing the Bush administration's attitude towards regulation. What remains to be seen is if Martin will be as deaf as Powell to public outcry over media regulation issues. Powell disastrously refused to hold public hearings over the 2003 decision on media ownership regulation, angering groups and Congress people from all political walks. Now that the FCC is required to revisit and rewrite these rules, Martin has an opportunity to turn an ear to the public that his predecessor refused. and the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals is currently considering a challenge to the FCC's new broadcast flag regulation. That regulation would require all new electronics capable of receiving digital television broadcasts to contain technology that allows program producers and broadcasters the ability to prevent the recording or copying of any programming. On March 15th, the court's three judges said that they weren't sure the consumer and library groups had legal standing, a measure of how directly affected they or their members will be by the FCC's ruling. The court asked the group to explain their position further before proceeding with the case. This is a pivotal point in the challenge, since if the court rules that these groups don't have standing, then it is fairly likely that the broadcast flag will be allowed to take effect, placing mandatory strong anti-copying controls into virtually all video-capable computers and consumer electronics. In some breaking news directly related to our feature today, the FCC has issued a special further notice of proposed rulemaking yesterday on March 17th, that imposes an immediate freeze on application grants of low-power FM translator construction permits for the next 6 months. The further notice to propose rulemaking also issues other initiatives for public comment about low-power FM and its community engagement. As we mentioned last week, Prometheus Radio Project et al. Have filed an emergency motion to impose a similar freeze on processing translator construction permits in light of mounting evidence that Edgewater Broadcasting Incorporated, Radio Assist Ministry Incorporated, and World Radio Link Incorporated, collectively the Ministries, are trafficking these translator licenses. This freeze comes despite a counterpetition filed by the Ministries asking for a dismissal of the petition filed by Prometheus et al. While the FCC does not recognize many of Prometheus's arguments about translators in its notice, or does recognize many of Prometheus's arguments about translators in its notice, the Commission is not acting on their recent petition with this freeze. No direct mention is made of the Ministries, nor Prometheus's et al.'s charges of improper trafficking in translator stations. We'll talk more about this after we hear some background from Harold Feld, one of the authors of the Prometheus et al. Petition, and it is coming right up. So it looks as if a fall from grace has indeed brought the FCC's scrutiny down upon low-power FM translator networks, at least without mentioning of any of them specifically. On Tuesday, March 15th, Paul talked to Harold Feld, Senior Vice President of the Media Access Project, to get some backstory on who's behind this apparent translator grab. The Media Access Project has joined the Prometheus Radio Project by issuing a petition to the FCC in order to expose what's been going on.
So, Harold, your firm, the Media Access Project, recently filed a petition with the FCC to block some or is it all current applications for new translator stations?
Well, what we've asked the FCC to do is to freeze all of the pending applications relating to the translator window that they opened in March of 2003. Now, that includes any ungranted applications for construction permits, any pending applications for transfer, or any applications to transmit once construction is complete.
And what prompted this?
Well, we were made aware members of the low-power FM community that three individuals operating under a number of corporate guises have been engaged in what we in the communications world call a trafficking scheme. Trafficking is when you take free licenses from the Federal Communications Commission and then flip them, as we say, by selling them on the open market. And it's a violation of the Communications Act and of longstanding federal policy, because it lets people come in pretending that they're going to do service to local communities, get something very valuable for free, and then turn around and sell it for their own profit.
And there's a large number of applications that are being trafficked here.
Yes. I mean, this is not just the occasional license or a particular set of circumstances. What we found was that the evidence showed that two companies, Edgewater Broadcasting and Radio Assets Ministry, shared the same three officers who were also the only board members. They had a common operating address, and they applied for over 4,000 translator licenses. And these three people then used a third company, World Radio Link, to aggressively market the construction permits as the FCC churned them out.
How did this fly under the FCC's radar with so many thousands of applications?
Well, it's because there were so many thousands of applications. You have to understand, the FCC, like most administrative agencies, is chronically understaffed. In this case, there is the added problem that there are not strict rules on the books about ownership rules in the translator service. The idea is that translator owners are, you know, relatively small, unsophisticated parties, which is no longer the truth, but, you know, this was the theory. The FCC deregulated the service very extensively in the late 80s and early 90s, so there's really no safeguards in place. There's only a few FCC staffers that are mechanically cranking out the applications, and by using, you know, these two different corporate shells, it was easy for these three individuals to hide their common identity and their and the fact that they were immediately transferring all of these licenses, just because it was nobody's job to take a close look, and they didn't have the staff to do it even if they wanted to.
Can they just transfer licenses back and forth between these companies? Doesn't that also require some degree of FCC approval?
Well, yes, all of these transfers require FCC approval. The problem is, again, the FCC, unlike in the full power services where you have rules governing how many stations you can own, or the translator services are regarded as something of a backwater. So it's a very, while you do need to submit an application and get FCC approval, and the FCC is supposed to make a public interest finding that the transfer serves the public interest, the fact is that it's become a very rubber stamp kind of process, very mechanical.
And what is the nature of these three companies? I mean, are they nonprofits? Are they for-profits? What do they do aside from have these translator licenses?
Well, that I honestly don't know. I can say that since all of our information comes from documents that they have filed with the Secretary of State of Idaho, which is where they're based, World Radio Link, I can say, did successfully bid on the FCC on full power FM licenses in a recent FCC auction. So they have a right to those licenses as well, and we've not uncovered any evidence that they were trafficking in those licenses. The websites of the companies are very uninformative. They portray themselves as interested in promoting Christian evangelical broadcasting. They speak of assisting folks who have been called to a religious radio ministry, but they don't provide a heck of a lot of information on what the activities of the company are, whether they have any employees other than these three people who own the companies, and what they do, if anything, other than collect free construction permits and then sell them for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And Radio Link has primarily been offering these translators to the Christian radio world.
Yes. They have been, in fact, aggressively marketing them within the Christian broadcasting community. They, for example, put it in appearance at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, which the NRB convention in Anaheim in 2005, which bills itself as the largest marketplace dedicated to Christian media professionals. World Radio Link had an ad in there in which it claimed to be representing Radio Access Ministry and Edgewater Broadcasting to sell hundreds of FM translator station construction permits to new entrant Christian broadcasters or existing Christian broadcasters. No mention, of course, that the three companies are really held by the same three people, but they've been very aggressive in marketing to the religious broadcasting community. And I do want to emphasize that in our petition we made clear that the religious organizations that have been buying these licenses are not themselves accused of any wrongdoing. Most of these are, we believe, unsophisticated purchasers who were offered an opportunity to further what they see as their ministry over the airwaves, and were assured by these three that it was a perfectly legitimate operation. So we have not extended this complaint to any of the purchasers, but we do believe that the three individuals involved here have violated federal law and that the FCC needs to begin an immediate investigation.
Maybe you could explain to me a little bit. I mean, it is legal for full power licenses to be traded or sold even back and forth between different companies.
It is permissible to sell a license. The problem here comes from the selling of a construction permit, and particularly where what you have is what's called a naked construction permit. They have not, as far as we know, actually taken any steps to build any of these facilities. The commission has always maintained as a strict policy that you should not be allowed to get a license to serve the local community. And when you apply, the commission has said in other rulemakings, they're making an implicit promise to serve the local community, that you shouldn't be allowed to apply under that understanding and then turn around and sell these things at a profit without even attempting to make any kind of service to the local community. And that's the problem here. If these guys actually went out and built up their translators and then, you know, sold one here and one there, that would be one thing. But the circumstances of these companies where it's a bunch of commonly owned companies applying for a massive translator licenses and then turning around and selling them as quickly as they can get them, all speaks to a deliberate effort to traffic in federal licenses, not to offer service as is required under the statute, but instead to get free licenses, turn them around, and sell them for a profit.
So if this had happened with full power station applications, the FCC would be stepping in and saying no.
Well, it's different in full power in no small part because now we have an auction system,
right,
where people compete by bidding for open license spaces. And what that means is you don't get the freebie.
Uh-huh.
The Federal Communications Commission is required to block trafficking. There's a specific provision of the Communications Act that says the FCC will set up anti-trafficking rules and prevent any unjust enrichment at the public's expense. But the commission has said, look, where people are bidding against each other and competing against each other, there isn't a risk of trafficking because the people who really want to offer the service are going to bid against the people who just want to make a quick profit, and they won't be able to get the, you know, the freebie. They'll get whatever the market value is at the station. So in full power, you don't see this sort of thing anymore. I mean, this used to be a very big deal. Prior to the enactment of the auction rules and prior to, you know, elimination of the ownership restrictions in the 1996 Communications Act, anti-trafficking used to be a very big deal. It's pretty much died away because everything's done by auction now, which is another reason why staff aren't particularly on the lookout for this sort of thing, because nobody thinks about it happening anymore.
Mm-hmm. But the translators are free, and they're turning around and being able to profit from them immediately.
Exactly.
And you are listening to Media Geek. Check us out on the web at www.mediageek.org, where you can read all about this issue and other issues that don't make it onto the program. This is a conversation that Paul had with Harold Feld of the Media Access Project about what looks to be a trafficking scheme of FM translator licenses on the part of three Christian radio networks working together. As we mentioned before, the FCC has just issued a freeze on all translator applications in order to investigate how supposed community resources have been applied.
And so why is the low-power FM community especially upset about this situation?
Well, I mean, the low-power FM community is very upset about this because every space that's going out to a translator takes away a potential space for an LPFM station. Back in 2000, when the FCC created the low-power FM service, it had originally intended for there to be a lot more LPFM services, stations. The National Association of Broadcasters, which hates any kind of competition, went to Congress and lobbied Congress very hard and got Congress to pass a law cutting back on the number of stations available, and instead requiring the FCC to do a study as to whether you could have the number the FCC originally wanted without causing interference. Now, the FCC had already determined that these stations were not going to cause any interference, but people fought hard against the NAB lobbying and Congress finally said, okay, instead of killing the service, we'll do another study. So these LPFM people have been following the rules. The study came out in 2003 and showed, you know, there is no danger of interference to high-power stations. So now there is legislation pending in Congress that would reverse the existing restrictions and would bring back the LPFM stations to the number of spots that they should have had. The problem is that LPFM stations and translators compete for the same space. So every space where you have a translator, you can't have an LPFM station. Every place where you have an LPFM station, you can't have a translator. So the commission opened up the translator window in 2003, and it is filling the slots that Congress took away and would reopen by legislation. So the LPFM community is saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we are providing real local service, real local community broadcasting, and you, FCC, are giving away our slots to people who at best are going to offer distant signals coming in from a satellite or from some terrestrial station hundreds of miles away. That was the policy debate. That already had the LPFM people pushing for a freeze. Then to discover that these stations are going to people who are breaking the rules, that this whole window is really about three people in Idaho making a quick profit at the expense of law-abiding LPFM stations. And then on top of that, the religious organizations are using loopholes in the translator rules to set up what amounts to a national low-power FM religious network in a way that skirts the rules. Now, that really gets people upset.
Yes, I can understand that completely. So have you heard from Radio Assist and Radio Link?
Well, yesterday, these three companies filed a motion to dismiss our petition, which I, speaking as a attorney representing the opposing party, will say, you know, we will respond to it. I can't go into the details of our response, but their emergency motion to dismiss is available on the FCC's website. In the relevant docket number is 99-25. Where all of this traffic is taking place. And we're planning on filing something in response either by the end of today or by tomorrow, which we feel will demonstrate that this emergency motion to dismiss that they have filed is without merit and the commission should go ahead and take the action that we've asked for.
And then the next step is waiting for the FCC to take up the matter?
Yes, exactly. And this is not something that has a timetable. The FCC can make a decision any time. We obviously have urged them to take action quickly. The commission is continuing to process the pending applications. These, you know, Edgewater and Radio Assist Ministry still have about 1,000 applications pending. Every week they crank out a couple of dozen more. So we think the commission has to act quickly to at least freeze the process while they investigate the situation, and of course, you know, the three companies have urged the commission not to take any action. So the commission needs to decide. The matter is complicated by the fact that Chairman Michael Powell is leaving at the end of this week, so there's a little uncertainty over who's going to be the new chairman, how the new chairman will want to proceed. We would like to see Powell resolve this before he leaves, but that requires all of the commissioners to vote. So we are hopeful that whatever the commissioners might decide on the ultimate policy, that they will agree with us that people shouldn't be allowed to break the law and profit at the public's expense, and will put a freeze in place pending a full investigation.
Well, Harold, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
And after we talked to him on Tuesday, March 15th, Harold Feld, representing Prometheus et al., filed his opposition to Edgewater et al.'s motion to dismiss Prometheus's petition to freeze translator applications. In his comments, Feld said this, quote, "Ministries has failed to produce any evidence to rebut the prima facie case based on publicly available documents that the principals of Ministries have engaged in an illegal scheme to traffic in commission licenses in violation of Section 309J3C and Section 309J4E of the Communications Act and longstanding commission policy. Applicants Parrish, Williamson, and Atkins do not give more than general denials to the facts stated in the petition and supported by public documents." End quote. As mentioned earlier, the FCC has placed a six-month freeze on new translator construction permits and licenses. From the agency's second order on reconsideration and further notice of proposed rulemaking, quote, "As an interim measure, while we consider these important questions, we direct the Media Bureau to stop granting FM translator new station construction permits for which short-form applications were filed in the 2003 window. This freeze is effective upon the release of this further notice and shall remain in effect for 6 months," end quote. And I've got to say that this is definitely good news for community media, and this is actually a new direction at the FCC from what we've seen in the past 4 years. I'm sure Paul will want to talk about this with me more next week. But what we're noticing here is an FCC that's actually starting to listen to its constituency and is becoming more responsive to them regarding the low-power FM issue. As part of this second order on reconsideration and further notice of proposed rulemaking, which is quite a mouthful, they've also issued room for comments by the public about low-power FM, about community engagement, about what people think of giving low-power FM slots away to translator networks that turns out that these three guys are just based in Idaho. So this could be a new direction, and with Kevin Martin coming in, we could see something new, or we could end up seeing a reversal again, yet to more of the same. This is something that we're going to be following quite closely, as we have been, since we think it's a critical issue here on Media Geek.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.